Welcome to The Other Coast, a podcast detailing the Malifaux meta in Los Angeles. My name is Jeff, and with me here is a SoCal player, Colgan.
Hey, everyone.
Hey, Colgan. So today, we're going to talk Rezzer upgrades, the next chapter in our ever-popular upgrade series. But before we get to that, I do want to apologize for the hiccup in our release schedule. It's a bit longer than usual, because Colgan dared to have a personal life, and, you know, that's completely unacceptable. We realize that, and we will try to prevent that in the future. So, Rezzer upgrades. I think just on the outset, before we get into the specific upgrades, yes, these are good upgrades, and, you know, the Rezzer faction as a whole is quite blessed, and Rezzer players, I think, kind of get a little bit defensive whenever the subject of upgrades come up, because, you know, there are factions who do not have the options that they do. But it's interesting to me that even though upgrade disparity exists, and this is something we've talked about in the past, like this very specific kind of game consequence or whatever. Upgrade disparities between the factions definitely exists, and yet I don't really think that that is responsible for any kind of identifiable the gap in faction result. What do you think about that, Colgan?
I would agree. I also think just in general, like whenever I look at Rezzer models, stat-wise, they feel like they're outperforming other factions by like a somewhat noticeable difference. But even having said that, yeah, I don't really feel like I would say Rezzers is like the powerhouse faction in comparison to other factions.
Right. And so, you know, even though we have suggested in the past that cost variability may be a solution for some of these underperforming upgrades, what I find interesting is that, you know, you have some factions that have upgrades that are better than others, but it's not, you know, necessarily super clear that the better upgrade is better than two stones. And so it is interesting to me, you know, whether intentionally, right, as a result of extensive testing and you know, mechanical evaluation or just dumb luck, that we had just managed to kind of hit on a cost for upgrades that appears to be like roughly equivalent, you know, good upgrade versus simply just keeping the two stones. Is would you say that you kind of view it similarly, or do you have a different take on that?
I would generally agree, because I feel like even when I think an upgrade is very strong, it's pretty uncommon where I'll double up on upgrades unless I'm playing against like a very specific keyword, or like it provides counter tech that I need in spades against whoever I'm playing against.
Mm-hmm. Sure. I mean, yeah, you know, Leadline Coat is great, but not every guild crew I build has two of them, right? So I think, although I did kind of say, well, you know, maybe it's that two stones are equal to good upgrades, generally speaking, it could also just be that because of the way Malifaux crews are built, you know, they typically do work out to 8 models, with a smaller crew being like 7 and a larger 9, right? I mean, that is very much the range, and 8 is very common. You know, it could simply be that, yes, there is this disparity, and actually maybe good upgrades are better than two stones, but it's still not really possible to just go hog wild with upgrades, right? I mean, as we're going to talk about, all three of the Rezzer upgrades are great, but do Rezzer crews, well, at least good anyways, but do Rezzer crews spend 12 stones on upgrades? You know, no, they don't. So, you know, I started out by saying, well, you know, maybe good upgrades are just worth two stones, and that's how it is. Although I think on another episode, I said that it's been my experience that the upgrades you get taken are actually worth more than two stones. So, I mean, I may be a bit inconsistent here, or, you know, maybe my thoughts aren't fully formed, which is, you know, to be expected, because our prep for episodes is terrible. So this is all top of the head, laid over, you know, years of whatever I took away from the games I played. But I do wonder to what extent it is that the upgrades that people take are actually properly costed, or if it's simply that Malifaux crew building is restrictive enough to where that itself is kind of a limiting factor in how often you're going to see upgrades, even if they are, you know, really good.
Yeah, I definitely think that the kind of inflexibility you have in like the overall sense of how your crew is going to be built plays a part in that, right? Like, even if you're trying to go with a horde crew, you honestly only end up with maybe like two or three more models.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like stat wise, you know, we've talked about the issue with low cost models, like low defensive stats make it really hard to keep them on the board and actually get full efficiency out of them. That it feels like it's always, you know, you're not getting enough models to make up for how much efficiency you're giving up on the concentration of them. And I think conversely, you know, you can bump up the efficiency of a model with upgrades, but there's going to be, you know, diminishing returns when you're sacrificing like one or two models in order to get more upgrades on your remaining crew.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. You do need enough models to achieve goals, and those goals can actually be quite complicated, especially because, you know, things like the deployment zone, you know, if you've got to stick a bunch of models or ski markers in your enemy's deployment zone, but you're playing corner, that's much more difficult than flank, right? And in Ganeron's 4, we are seeing more horde crews or larger crews, right? You know, there's a Dreamer build that's been going around that has, you know, like 11 models or something like that. You know, the Corrupted Hound summons, you know, GG4 just in general, I think across factions, does enable, you know, multiple small minions or, you know, multiple small models or whatever to a greater extent than previous ones did. But what's interesting to me is that when you flip it on its head and you look at pools that were highly favorable for elite crews, even then, you know, you weren't spending 10 points on upgrades, right? Or, you know, 8, 10, 12, right? And I think that's because in Malifaux, there was just a floor of activations that you needed that you couldn't go beneath. And, you know, to a certain extent, I guess our listeners could be like, well, okay, so why are they talking about this if you really just, you know, can't take us, you know, beyond a certain number of upgrades, realistically speaking? And it's because we've talked about cost variation as a means of balancing upgrades, primarily in the context of, well, maybe the worse upgrades should just get discounts until they start getting taken. But it could be that, you know, the good upgrades are worth more than 2 stones. And it, you know, maybe Leadline Coat, for instance, really should be 3 stones. And it's, you know, it doesn't mean that Leadline Coat isn't overpowered at 2 just because you can't always afford to take 2 copies of it. Whereas, you know, normally if something is overpowered for its cost, you would want to maximize however many times you could take it. But just the format of Malifaux games happens to prevent that form of exploitation. I don't know. It's kind of interesting to me. I do think Weird is hamstringing itself a bit with its costing mechanism for these general upgrades, but I also think it's not something Weird's going to consider changing in 3rd, if they even consider changing it in 4th.
Yeah, it's always like interesting. I think I was talking a little bit about the pre-show, how like recently I've just honestly taken to reading like rules for all these games that I know I'm never going to play, just because I like seeing different people's approaches to like design and like solving different like mechanical issues.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, so like a few of my friends have been really getting into like War Machine Mark IV. So I've been reading through the rules and reading through like the variation between the different war casters has been kind of interesting. So their system is similar in Malifaux, where you basically have your 1 liter, and you don't pay a cost for them, right? They come free with your crew. Mm-hmm. But there's so much variation in like play style and potential impact. It's kind of like, I'm wondering, like, how do you like juggle all these like very different characteristics and say this is kind of the same power level? Like, one of the, in the same fashion, like one of the masters is like an assassin with like low armor, but they're able to like, you know, basically debuff and nuke a single unit, and they have a lot of mobility, versus like another one, which is like a straight up melee monster that goes around and cuts things in half with its like broadsword and has like heavy armor, but it's a little bit slow.
Mm.
And in addition to that, they have like different spells and effects that will manipulate or like buff or debuff other units in their army. And, you know, with each faction, there's like 3 to 4 of these warcasters. And it's like, in addition to all these other like 1 or 2 point modifications you have with like little attachments you can add and like all these units, like, where at like, I feel like at some point there can't be like some mathematical formula. It really just has to be like gut feeling from playtesting, where it's like, this isn't as strong as I think like a master or an upgrade should be. And I'm not sure if it would be like beneficial or even like reasonable to try and like come up with the mathematical way to balance that. So it feels just like tough to tie yourself to a specific way of costing something.
Right. Yeah. I'm increasingly becoming suspicious of mechanics, you know, where your leader is free or whatever, where there's no price or cost differential potential in the game. You know, like in M2E, as we've talked about in the past, it had cash. So that was a potential way to, you know, to alter the cost or the price of what you were getting from your leader. Whereas, of course, in M3E, they don't have that. Your leader is just free. And, you know, with these upgrades as well, because they've just made the decision and the conscious decision, I think, to price them all at the exact same rate. I think they are giving up one of the easiest tools they have for balance and for balance testing. You know, if you take some of these really crummy upgrades and you make them 1 instead of 2, are you going to break the game? You know, almost certainly not. I can't think of a single bad upgrade that would suddenly destroy the game if it were 1 stone instead of 2. And if it did destroy the game, you know, you could just change its cost right back. So it does, I guess, kind of confuse me why Weird finds this model desirable from a design standpoint, but they do. So I guess, you know, we have to live with it for now. But why don't we actually go into the topic of the episode now, Rezzer upgrades. We're going to start with the first one in alphabetical order, which is Grave Spirit's Touch. Colgan, can you just tell us about Grave Spirit's Touch?
Yeah, so Grave Spirit's Touch is in totality like a very defensive upgrade. You get regen +2. The second action is Blasphemous Ritual, where basically you can remove a corpse marker to give everyone with +3 focus +1. And then if you're a minion, you gain Terrifying 11, or if you already have Terrifying, you increase the difficulty of it by +1. So if you're like Terrifying 11, you go up to Terrifying 12.
Yeah, so I mean, when I read this, Regen 2 is fantastic. Blasphemous Ritual, you know, you really would like to stick this on a model that doesn't have a bonus action, and unless you're Ohagoro Bettori, or you know, however you say that model's name, that's generally not your higher station models and generally not your higher costed models, right? Whereas if you can stick this on a minion and give it Terrifying, you know, that is also just really, really good. And so, you know, to me, regen and Terrifying kind of work pretty well, whereas Blasphemous Ritual, if you can do it, you know, it might be better than the bonus action a model like an elite model has or something, or situationally it might be relevant, whereas like at the start of the game, you know, maybe a model has an attack as a bonus action and you're just too far. So you could instead, you know, if there's a corpse, you can get some focus or whatever. But, you know, I would say that Grave Spirit's Touch is often something I'm looking to put on a really good model, whether it's a minion or not. It's going to be kind of a more expensive model. And so I find Blasphemous Ritual to be the least valuable, or at least the least utilized part of the three effects on this upgrade. What, you know, would you say that you've had a similar experience, or, you know, would you disagree?
I mean, I can definitely see that considering the other two are like passives and are always in effect.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, like, even on that stance, like if Blasphemous Ritual is like the worst action on your upgrade, I think you're doing pretty well. Because like you said, even if you do have a bonus action, I think especially in keyword with Rezzers, since it's so easy to get those course markers, at the very least, it makes for a very like solid turn one where you can splash focus on, if you plan correctly, probably like definitely on all the models you want it on, but perhaps maybe even your entire crew before you start spreading out for the objectives.
Mm-hmm. So Regen 2, I think, isn't... Well, so how should I put this? I have seen Grave Spirit's Touch on models, you know, maybe like Izamu or, you know, some expensive, strong model where the expectation, right, it can't benefit from Terrifying because it's not a minion. So the expectation is that it really is the Regen 2... that's, you know, that's the effect that the player wants, right? That's why they bought Grave Spirit's Touch. Do you think that Regen 2 on, you know, again, like in Izamu or on your master or something, you know, the Whisper exists, so this is probably why you don't see, you know, that Grave Spirit's Touch doesn't, like, get put on masters all that often. But, you know, what do you think about taking Grave Spirit's Touch essentially for regen, right? I mean, if you can get a Blasphemous Ritual off, fantastic. But The idea is that it really is this regen that's justifying the upgrade.
Personally, I feel like the Terrifying part of the card is too strong. So I feel like it's a little bit wasteful just to take it for the regen. So if I were to put this on a crew and, you know, I don't really play Rezzers, I would always be looking at giving it to a minion, if anything.
Sure. I mean, I you do see it a lot on, say, the Hanged, with Caster. Of course, you know, with Caster, the regen is never wasted because they have all these overheal effects. But also, Caster gives you access to, you know, models like the Cavern Nephilim, which are just these expensive minions that have, you know, a bunch of hit points and benefit a lot from getting the Terrifying and the regen. So, I mean, I would agree with you that the best way to use Grave Spirit's Touch really is on these expensive, you know, 7 or 8 and higher cost minions, you know, your Kentarai, you know, the Hanged, like we mentioned, the Cavern Nephilim, you know, models like that. I do recall early on in M3E, you did sometimes see Grave Spirit's Touch on Daw 1 because, you know, he's only got 6 hit points, but it only takes 1 damage from everything as long as you can discard cards. So right, having that regen 2 really could keep him in the game a lot longer. Now that seems to be a use for Grave Spirit's Touch that has really lost favor because, I mean, I think have to go back maybe a year and a half or 2 years even until I feel confident I can say that I've seen it. So I would probably agree with you that at this point the dominant method of using Grave Spirit's Touch is that you stick it on, you know, an elite minion. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, in terms of like personal experience, I think when I first started, you know, I favored healing a lot since it seems so strong, but as I've played more games, I feel like you know, generally you're kind of running out of steam by like turn four or five anyways.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like generally the extra, if you need to make an extra investment into healing, it's usually not worth it over just, you know, burning a stone for some extra damage reduction. Because like turn four or five, if I'm losing guys that I might have possibly saved from healing, I feel like I'm not getting enough out of them in those last few activations that it was worth the upfront cost of bringing like another model or paying extra specifically for healing.
Right. I mean, one thing Gracier Touch, I think, does really well is it, you know, kind of, it benefits a lot from the pre-existing defenses that are already on the model. You know, if your model has hard to kill or armor or hard to wound, which, you know, all of these things are found on various Rezzer models, Rezzer minions. You know, a model that can regen itself above hard to kill. Fantastic, right? A model that's essentially always taking min, or I shouldn't say always, but very frequently taking weak damage because it's got hard to wound. You know, regenning on that is great. You know, if it's got armor and, you know, regen, again, fantastic, right? So in any of those defensive effects that tend to be reducing the amount of damage that you take, you know, you're still healing for the exact same amount of damage, but, right, because your regen value doesn't change, but it just, I think, adds value to those other defenses. Whereas terrifying, of course, you know, if a model fails, it's a terrifying test, the attack simply doesn't go through. So terrifying doesn't layer over armor or hard to wound in the same way that regen does, but, you know, if anything, it's even better, right? You know, having to hit a model with terrifying, and then once you pass that, finding that you're going into armor or hard to wound is annoying, because it was a struggle just to get the attack, and now if you get your attack and you hit, if it's got hard to wound, you're doing min damage. If it's got armor, you're doing a little bit damage, and then you're telling me it's gonna regen some more. That's just really frustrating. And the fact that it tends to go on you know, really high value minions, which as kind of works out in Malifaux, tends to mean that these minions, you know, they might be a little overtuned, right? I mean, most of the top performers in the game are overtuned. I don't know if it's an inevitability that they are, but I do think that's probably the way it shakes out. And so in a way, what this upgrade does is it kind of it widens the gap between these sort of elite minions and, you know, serviceable minions. And in a game like Malifaux, where crew space is, you know, the competition for list space is so fierce, and we already have a dynamic where great crowds out good, Grave Spirit's Touch, I think, exacerbates that dynamic of crew hiring.
Yeah, I would agree. Because I'm thinking, you put this on a Hanged, and I don't think there's really, you know, if I bring counter tech, it's usually going to be like one model, but I don't think there's any model that could reliably take out an 8 health, terrifying 13 regen to incorporeal model reliably. Like, sure, I can take Ruthless and we ignore the terrifying, but then just incorporeal health 8 regen 2 is just like, fuck, man. Whenever you bring that, it never feels worth it to like dedicate attacks to the Hanged, and then they just get to be even more annoying.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, it's kind of like, okay, well, you've made your Hanged a 10-point model. Prove to me you can get 10 points out of it now, right? Like, that's sort of the challenge to your opponent, rather than, oh, well, you spent 10 stones on this thing, can you keep it alive? Because oftentimes the answer is, yes, I can keep it alive. So in terms of Rezzer upgrades, where would you put Grave Spirit's Touch? 1, 2, or 3?
I would put it at a solid 2.
I would agree with that. In terms of, you know, sort of the overall population of upgrades, would you say it's, you know, tier 1, tier 2, or tier 3?
I would say it's like tier 1.5, Like you were saying, regen is really strong, but I feel like you need existing defenses. Like having a health 8 model with no defenses and just regen plus 2 doesn't read great to me, because generally they're going to die before the regen ever kicks in. And the same, like, you know, throwing Terrifying 11 is nice on something, but again, unless they have some kind of like base underlying defenses, I'm not going to drop 2 stones to give like Terrifying and regen plus 2 to just like a blank minion in my crew.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like a lot of other factions, they don't have like the base defensive stats that you see on a lot of Rezzer models.
I could see that. I would say that, you know, I would agree with you that it's kind of, you know, it's in tier one, but on the lower edge. I would say that it goes solidly into tier one in Caster's crew. And, you know, for regen, if you activate your model and it hasn't taken any damage and you don't have Caster's overheal mechanic, you're not getting anything from it. But because Caster's crew does gain, you know, potentially a lot from overhealing, I think that that makes Grave Spirit's Touch, which is already a solid choice, just even better. And so I feel comfortable saying that it's, you know, like solidly a tier one choice in Caster's keyword. All right. So next would be Killer Instinct. This is by no means bad, but if our listeners are like, oh yeah, that exists, you know, it could be just because of the overall strength of the Rezzer upgrade bench. Colin, can you tell us about Killer Instinct?
Yeah, Killer Instinct. So the top two abilities are Loop Their Corpse, where end of your activation, you can eat a corpse marker and add a soul stone to your pool. There's Ruthless, which I'm sure everyone's familiar with. And then the minion-only ability is Deadly Pursuit, which during the end phase, you can push up to 4 inches.
So, you know, when you listed those abilities, they all kind of sound like they're all over the place. Like, what is your read on this upgrade and who you want to stick it on? Or, you know, how this upgrade has been constructed and how the abilities work together?
Yeah, so the way I read it is I kind of ignore the Ruthless part. I'm looking at Loot Their Corpses and Deadly Pursuit, so I can kind of see it on, like, a Scheme Runner. You know, the extra 4-inch push at the end phase is really nice for just sneaking out of engagement or just getting a little further up the board. And then Loot Their Corpse is very situational where, you know, if you can get a Soulstone, it's great, but the fact that it happens at the end of your activation usually means that either you're dominating the board and there's, like, easy corpses to get. I guess in Rezzers, you know, you can set it up so turn one you can get a free soulstone, though depending on your list, like specifically building for that seems like a waste, because not only are you paying for this upgrade, but you're also paying for the model to do that. So I feel like it's Luther Corpse is just super situational and it's not worth building around, but I could see a Scheme Runner, you know, sneakily grabbing a corpse marker off of an enemy model that happened to like die near an objective.
Yeah. Or, you know, there is a lot of course marker generation in Rezzer. I mean, especially like McMorning 2 comes to mind. But if you take this 4 soulstone generation, you need to get to turn 3 before you've cut a profit on this. So, you know, Loot Their Corpse alone isn't going to justify this upgrade. Deadly Pursuit, it's nice to have. An extra move is always interesting. And of course, in the current Gaining Grounds pool, there are some positional scoring concerns, right? Like protected territory, you know, guard the vaults. So yeah, being able to make this move in the end phase can definitely be useful. And Ruthless, I mean, hey, who wouldn't want to just have Ruthless? So it's 3 abilities that are all independently nice, but I don't think the combination of them adds up to something that I want to spend 2 stones on very often.
Yeah, I would agree. Like you said, it's kind of all over the place. So if you want Ruthless, the other 2 abilities don't really help you. I guess Loot the Corpse kind of, because generally if you're grabbing Ruthless, it's going to be for like a model to kill things. So, hey, you can get a Soul Stone out of it. But I'm not sure that's worth two Soul Stones because, you know, I feel, yeah, outside of Ruthless, it doesn't really pump up your offensive ability quite that much. And I mean, honestly, just the biggest thing is your other options in Rezzers are just so much better.
Yeah, I mean, as we'll talk about with the Whisperer, like there's kind of a better option to try to address Terrifying. And Manipulative, which Ruthless also deals with, is not... I think people take Ruthless for Terrifying, right? You know, someone's like, oh, I'm going to play into a Terrifying crew, like a Dark crew or whatever, I better bring Ruthless. But nobody is like, you know, I'm going to play into Performer, so I better bring a lot of Ruthless to take care of Manipulative. I mean, partially because the Manipulative models are not very good, but also because Manipulative as a defense, for one thing, it takes care of itself, right? Activation order simply can turn it off. But for another, you know, Focus, which using Focus on a Terrifying duel doesn't feel great. It doesn't guarantee that you're going to pass the Terrifying. And even if you do, it doesn't then help you do more damage. Whereas when you hit a model with Manipulative and you spend your Focus to get over Manipulative, if you hit, you're getting that plus to damage from the Focus. So the behaviors on the table for addressing these two different defenses are very different. And so I don't really think that people take Ruthless to address Manipulative. You know, the one example, or the one exception, rather, I should say, that I have encountered is I played a tournament game where my opponent was Maw and took the Ruthless upgrade against my Crossroads crew. And that makes sense because five of my models have Manipulative. So that's a lot of Manipulative on the board. And, you know, the Bayou upgrade, I think it's called Inferiority Complex, that gives Ruthless. It also gives Swagger, which is fantastic. And the minion only ability Bully, that's great on a higher cost minion like a War Pig or something. My opponent put him on Bushwhackers, so not gonna have a ton of impact in the game I played. But Bully is also a really good ability. So I do think that Inferiority Complex is much better constructed as an offensive upgrade, so it's kind of more clear who you're gonna want to put it on. Whereas Killer Instinct, you know, the Whisperer's card draw thing is often going to solve Terrifying, and then the other abilities just have no synergy. It's kind of like, who am I putting Killer Instinct on, and against which opponents is Killer Instinct the right choice?
Yeah, I would agree with all of that. Luther Corpses is just too slow and too situational. Like, I don't want to feel like I'm tied down to ending or staying in a certain spot in order to get value out of my upgrade.
Yeah, I mean, I really do. You know, I look at all three abilities. All three are things I would love to have, right? I don't feel like this is, you know, like some of these other upgrades that exist in other factions where the abilities on them, I have no expectation that they're going to be relevant. You know, Deadly Pursuit is going to be relevant. Loot Their Corpse, often going to be relevant. But I just think, you know, the fact that the abilities have no synergy or pretty limited synergy, the fact that I don't really see what kind of model I would want to put this on, and just the other competition from, or, you know, the competition from the other excellent Rezzer upgrades, just means that this is something that essentially never sees the table. I cannot recall the last time I used this. If I used it at all, it was probably very early in M3E where, you know, I was still trying to feel out where things sit. And in the games that I've watched, and I do watch, you know, a lot of games on Vassal when I can, I also don't see this. So, yeah, I mean, to me, I think that this is kind of a bust in terms of an upgrade. And I also, you know, the fact that the abilities don't really work together, even if you were to put it into, say, Guild, where, you know, Guild has Leadline Coat, which is awesome, and then its other two upgrades. I mean, Extra Marksman you see sometimes, but the last one, whose even its name escapes me, like, you pretty much never see. you know, even in that case, I still don't think that you would see it taken very much, unless you know, you're playing into DAW or something and you just really need that Ruthless, because the lack of synergy makes this really hard to use. Even, I mean, let's say that it's worth its two stones. Getting that value from it, I think, is going to be kind of a challenge, just because what model are you putting it on and what is that model going to be doing to where it's getting two stones of value from the upgrade?
Yeah, I definitely agree. I feel like, honestly, even if this was like the only upgrade available, I don't think we'd see it very often. I feel like personally, the only time I'd ever get it is if I'm like at 10 stones. I'm like, I'm not going to use 10 stones. I can't afford another minion because I don't want to go down to like 5 or 4 stones. So I guess I'll throw an upgrade on someone.
Okay. So in terms of Rezzer upgrades, would you put this at 1, 2, or 3?
3.
Yeah, I would agree with that. In terms of, you know, tier 1, tier 2, or tier 3, where do you see it?
I definitely see it as tier 3. Again, like you said, none of the abilities by themselves are like particularly bad. It's just don't have any cohesion on the upgrade.
Would you take this if it were 1 stone?
I probably would, because then at that point, Luther Quartz goes off once and you pay for yourself.
Mm-hmm. I agree. You know, at that point, I still think it's a bit of a challenge. You know, what kind of model are you going to put it on? But at 1 stone, yeah, the fact that it can recoup its cost turn 1, which you can probably just set up for, is definitely a very compelling factor. Ruthless for 1 stone feels worth it, you know, depending on the crew matchup. And then Deadly Pursuit, you know, if you stick this on something like a Flesh Construct or a Kentaurai, you know, a minion that can take care of itself, but also has a good amount of movement so that, you know, if you need to play wide into corner or something. Yeah, I mean, I think at 1 stone, it becomes appealing. But I think it's Luther Quartz, which to me is sort of the least interesting aspect of it at 2 stones, becomes the most interesting aspect at 1 stone. And, you know, we have talked in the past about Malifaux's costing structure, but it does surprise me how frequently, you know, when I drill down into something, that these small changes in cost can have a dramatic impact in how I evaluate like a model or an upgrade.
Yeah, and you know, like we're always saying, that is also a function of just how low the point values are in Malifaux in general, right? Mm-hmm.
All right. Now we come to number 3, the Whisper, which I always in my mind think is the Whisperer. But no, it is the Whisper. Kogan, why don't you take it away?
Yep. So on Whisper, we got Intuition, the ability that is somehow always easy to forget, even though it's easily the best thing about this card. So at the beginning of the model's activation, look at the top 3 cards and return them in any order. Second top ability is Research Specimens. So if you kill an enemy model, you draw a card. And the minion-only ability is Stubborn, which enemy attack actions that are resisted by willpower suffer a minus when targeting this model.
Yeah, I mean, what can we say about this that hasn't been said already? It's just, it's fantastic. And the thing is, Intuition is ridiculous. Yeah. This is a card game. Card manipulation effects are going to be in the game. So, you know, I don't really know what the fix to Intuition is. Like, you know, should it only be 2 cards? Should this upgrade cost 3 stones? Should Intuition be the minion-only ability? I mean, I don't really know. Because I think no matter what, there's going to be ways to abuse this. But Intuition is amazing. I mean, it even, I think, kind of explains why Killer Instinct is not more compelling, at least for its Ruthless, right? Because you can see what's going on. And in most cases, terrifying is a fairly modest amount, right? You need a 5 or a 6 generally for most models. And so, you know, with 3 cards, you have a very decent chance of figuring that out. And even if you see that you can't pass the terrifying with it, at least you're going to know that ahead of time. And so the not only are you getting a lot of potential effectiveness in your ability to order these results, but the ability to forecast what your turn is going to look like because you know these results are coming is just amazing. And I think, you know, it's so powerful that in for a lot of mid-tier and beginning players, right? Like, I mean, players kind of at our level and, you know, less experienced than us, the main challenge is actually correctly predicting the importance of what you're, you know, what you need to use these things for. Well, that, and of course, remembering what cards you put in what order afterwards. But yeah, I mean, intuition is just so strong, and the stronger the model, the, you know, the more you're getting out of intuition, right? I mean, it's a value add effect, right? I mean, it's at least partially responsible for Seamus being such a huge problem, because you're gonna know off the top what your turn, you know, is gonna look like, or what your options look like for your 4-6-8 gun. If Lord Cooper had access to intuition, I bet people would be complaining about him a lot more.
Yeah, 100% agree. I think intuition alone is easily worth the cost of the upgrade. Mm-hmm. Like, nothing else on this card, intuition, yes, auto take. the only downside to, like, intuition, I remember, it's like, I always, if I would ever take it, I'd be afraid to take it into a tournament. And then, like you were saying, like, mess up the ordering. And it's like, you fuck up your own turn. And it's like, you can literally see the cards. And it's just like, I can't recover from this. They're never going to take me seriously.
Oh, then the number of times I've done that to myself is pretty depressing. And I mean, I agree with you. Like, intuition on its own probably validates this card for an elite model, right? Which is really the only kind of model that you're going to stick this on. Research specimens, very nice freebie. And it's a freebie that has synergy, right? It's not some kind of, like, just random effect or whatever, because intuition is going on a model that is probably pretty savage. So after it kills something, you're drawing cards off of it. And if you kill fast enough, right, if the results are fortuitous enough, you might even know what you're drawing from intuition. Or, you know, if you have other at the start of turn effects that let you draw a card, you can use intuition in that way and, you know, either peel off a high card into your hand or peel a low card that you would have flipped off the deck. You know, in that regard, somewhat like rig the deck. Yeah, intuition is not only fantastic in its own right, it's helping improve research specimens, although, you know, not super common, right? Because oftentimes you are going to use those 3 cards on other things. But, you know, sometimes it will directly relate and sometimes it'll indirectly relate. But just the fact that research specimens has this synergy with a intuition, which, as we said, is an ability that justifies a card on its own, is just extra value. And then stubborn. I mean, it's okay. I don't think stubborn validates putting this on a minion, even in matchups like if you're going to play against Pandora, where you know you're facing a ton of willpower. I still think it's the offensive capabilities of what you can get from intuition that decides where this goes, rather than, you know, the defensive aspect of stubborn, like, oh, should I put this on maybe an elite minion instead of my master or whatever? But if this does go on an elite minion, it's just great to have this extra defense against willpower attacks.
Yeah, completely agree. It's like, stubborn is very situational. It's nice if it comes up, but you're not taking the upgrade for anything else other than intuition, so everything else on the card is just a nice bonus.
Yeah, I mean, so I do think the most common use of intuition is to stick it on your absolutely most elite model, right? Which, I mean, doesn't make shouldn't come as any sort of surprise, but it's fantastic on Sheamus, on Caster, any sort of fighting master, especially if, you know, like with Caster 2, for instance, where he doesn't have Sheamus's escape, so it could be quite committal piling in to, you know, do your Alpha Strike or whatever. The fact that you have, some knowledge of what's coming, can give you the confidence, I guess, to make that play. For me, my most common use of the Whisper, is when I play Daw. I stick two of them on my hand, just because I'm trying to live the intuition dream of finding the Black Joker and then, you know, putting it in a situation where I can flip it and it'll turn into the Red Joker.
Sure.
I have actually never achieved that in a Daw game. Like, I've had the hang just flip the Black Joker before, but I've never been able to intuition it, even though I have two, and even though I delay my hang's activations as long as possible to, you know, try to get the deck as small as possible. And so, you know, by the time my hang are going, there's like, you know, 30 or 25 cards or something, and I'm going to be looking at six of them. How has this not happened for me yet? I don't understand it, and yet I have not managed to achieve it. And so that's my personal frustration with intuition and the hanged.
I don't know what much else there is to say. Intuition is amazing. It's worth 2 points. You should pretty much, I feel like you're pretty much always taking this on your master, unless you're very hard pressed for soul stones.
Yeah, or I mean, you know, I do think that there are masters out there, like say Molly 1, you know, probably Caster 1, possibly Yan Lo 1 or something, where, you know, it would be great to have, but maybe you just need those stones elsewhere and you're not getting the same sort of impact as you would be in some of those other situations. I would tend to suspect that you can usually find two stones to stick this thing on your best model. But I don't, it's not like every single Rezzer game, the opponent has Whisper on their master. So,
sure.
I think someone could make the argument that, well, they should, or, you know, it would never be the wrong choice to do that. But as we, you know, have talked about, like at the beginning of the episode, Malifaux crew hiring dynamics do tend to work out in such a way, as to where it really is a challenge to fit in everything you need. And so sometimes you might have to stick the Whisper on a more active model, on a model you think is going to be doing a bit more for you than it, you know, it would if you put it on your master. But at the very least, it's an upgrade that is always, or I was going to say always going to get you value, but as you mentioned, intuitions get forgotten a surprising number of times. So I guess if you do forget to look at the cards and do the reordering, then you're not getting any value from it. But in theory, Whisper is never a mistake. And the only question, you know, Whisper on your master is a never a mistake. Whisper on some expensive, useful model, never a mistake. If you stick it on some support model, like a nurse or something, you know, that's probably not the right use for it. But you can potentially get some value out of it even then. It's just a very powerful upgrade. In terms of where you think it sits for Rezzer's Colgan, would you say it's a 1, 2, or 3?
Yeah, 1.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I would agree with that, hands down. Tier 1, 2, or 3?
Tier 1, easily.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Like, in terms of, you know, the other just absolutely best upgrades, right? You know, talking Leadline Coat, you know, Magical Training. You know, there might be like one more or something. But you know, where do you think Whisper sits, right? Do you think it has a fair claim to being maybe the best upgrade in the game, or do you think it is clearly edged out by something else? And if so, you know what?
I think it definitely has a fair claim. Like you're saying, like the power boost it gives to a master like Sheamus is just fucking ridiculous. And you know, the play against like Ruthless and Terrifying is great. You know, how, you know, if you have like 13-1-13 against a Terrifying attack, that is like the worst thing you can have, right?
Uh-huh.
You flip a 13 on the Terrifying, flip a 1 on the attack, you have to, and then you fail, and then it's like, all right, we'll have to do Terrifying again, and you burn another 13. Or you just flip it, so now, you know, okay, you fail Terrifying on a 1, but you probably have like a 5 or a 6 in your hand.
Mm-hmm.
So you just cheat that, and then, okay, now you have Severes on your hit and wound.
Right, and you know, one thing I have noticed from higher level play, and we've talked about this a couple times in the past, is that higher level players read the game state forward in a superior manner, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just an ability that they have. So that when they make these committal plays that look risky to me, right, as a mid-tier player, it's because they expect with a high degree of reliability that this is going to happen. And the Whisper is just providing more information to make these high-impact plays even more reliable. And if you can, you know, take off an opponent's really strong model very safely, that's huge, right? You know, between these higher level games that I've been watching, I'm not going to say that people never come back. People, you know, you can claw back from an early setback. But oftentimes, mm-hmm. it is, you know, one player made a little bit of a mistake and someone else pounced on it, or someone had the resources in hand to do something that was very committal, but, you know, they knew it would work. And the Whisper just gives you that extra margin that I think, you know, between players of equal skill, and as long as they are proficient enough in the game to make use of this information, right? So like at the mid-tier and higher, between players of equal skill, this additional information can, you know, it's not determinative, I don't think, but it can have a huge impact on the game.
Yeah, I think just between intuition and like research specimens, like you can kind of end up almost like two cards ahead, right? Like with intuition, you can avoid wasting a high card on a low TN test, or, you know, doing your bonus action, you know, like where you need a 5 or better. It's like, oh, there goes my 11. So it's preserves your cards in that sense. And then, you know, you can also just pull another card from the deck. And then that in turn makes it so another, you can possibly make another, you know, risky play later where you have the cards to actually back up your success.
Yeah. I mean, I've even seen things like, oh, well, I'm an intuition. It's all garbage. I'm going to attack my own model. My own model, you know, it's not relenting. It is defending. And I've, you know, arranged it so that now I've burned out these 2 weeks, right? I mean, that's a little AP if inefficient. You don't want to have to do that, but I have seen it before. It just, not only is it giving you this added information, but the number of ways you can use that added information to your advantage is massive, right? It's huge. Far more than, you know, I can count.
Mm-hmm.
And in a game with fairly small margins, which Malifaux does have, you know, fairly small margins, right? I mean, as we've mentioned, the cost scale is kind of truncated, but the whole game scale is actually fairly truncated, right? The number of wounds, the way damage tracks work and healing track work and so on and so forth. When you know the outcome of events, it's huge. I mean, it's almost impossible to overstate the impact that can have on the game. And it's the kind of thing where armor one is armor one for everybody. But intuition, the better you are as a player, the more you're getting from it. And the larger the gap between you and your opponent, right? If you're playing someone who isn't as strong with as you are, that knowledge, you know, the information you've gained from Whisper can help make the game just feel incredibly oppressive, in fact. Because one of the things about playing stronger players is it often feels like everything they're doing is working. And the first reaction might be like, you know, this lucky jerk, why are they winning everything? But, you know, I think if you actually do then later break down the game, you know, it's not luck. I mean, okay, sometimes it may be luck, but I'm willing to bet in most circumstances, no, it's that they understood what was achievable at that moment, and then they went in and did it. And if, you know, in factions, Whisper doesn't exist, it's that comes down to things like model knowledge, you know, understanding your hand and stuff like that. But when you throw intuition in the mix, again, it's extending that window. So I don't think that this is really a good upgrade for the game, or at least that intuition being one of the default abilities instead of the minion only ability, because there are definitely really good minions that would employ intuition to potentially devastating effect, but they're not Sheamus, right? So I do kind of question whether or not intuition is helping the health of the game, where it currently is on the Whisperer.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. I do feel like the difference in power between Whisper Sheamus and non-Whisper Sheamus is pretty significant.
Yeah, you also will see Whisper on summoners, right? Because that's super useful. It sucks to, you know, I'm going to stone for my crow and then I flip my crow. Toshiro, he's a henchman. If you hire Toshiro, you often also stick the Whisper on him to make summoning the Ashigars a bit easier. But then you also see it in situations like with Yan Lo, people stick it on Chiaki because that spirit flute having that mask is really useful to get out the reliquary upgrades. And so not only the power, but just the utility and the range of options on intuition really, I think, is going above the impact that I think an upgrade probably should have in the game. And is it the best upgrade in the game? I don't feel comfortable making that judgment, because of course that depends on a lot of other things, right? Like, what is the pool like? What are the models in the faction able to do with that upgrade? And so I would agree that I think Whisper SB in that conversation, but I personally don't feel like I can make a pronouncement as to which upgrade actually wins. But I do think that Whisper is problematic for the game. In kind of similarly to how Leadline Coat is kind of problematic for Guild in that it has impacted design for the Guild. For Whisper, I don't think it has impacted design. I don't think Weird's been like, Whisper exists, you know, intuition exists, so we have to be careful, you know, what abilities we give to models. I think it's just that intuition is, you know, Whisper is allowing you to stick intuition onto any model, and that is having a warping effect because of what some of these models can do.
Yeah, can definitely see that.
All right. Overall, how do you think the Rezzers sit as a faction in terms of, you know, their upgrade options? Would you say they're tier 1, tier 2, or tier 3?
I would definitely say they're tier 1.
I would agree with that. I think they actually are, you know, the best, right? As a faction, I think the Rezzer upgrade roster is probably the best among all the factions. And I know when I build Rezzer crews, I am often disappointed by the fact that I cannot fit in as many upgrades as I want. Whereas, you know, with other... Now, admittedly, I am a tool-up player. I enjoy upgrades as a mechanic, just in Malifaux and in games in general. I like tooling up my guys. I mean, I think that that's fun. You know, fun is, of course, subjective. I can't explain really why I like it. I just, you know, I think it's fun to do. And so I'm looking to take upgrades probably more than the average player is anyways. But even with that allowance, you know, there's always room for upgrades, right? the old advertising slogan, there's always room for Jell-O. I feel that way about Rezzer upgrades. It's just really disappointing to me that I can't spend 8 or 12 stones every game giving these things upgrades. Corian, do you think the gap between the Rezzer faction upgrades and the other factions is significant enough to where, you know, Weird should really address it? Or, and I guess I kind of suspect your answer, because we have talked in the past about how upgrades don't seem responsible for faction disparity on a wide level, even though upgrade disparity exists. Can you, I guess, talk to that subject a bit? Because if you just answer my question, you know, it's going to be the answer we've already heard before. But just, you know, why do you think that that is?
As far as, like, why the disparity in upgrade power doesn't actually affect the game as a whole?
I mean, I'm sure it does affect it. But yeah, like, so we're saying Rezzers have the best upgrade roster, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why aren't they, you know, why doesn't that seem to be specifically responsible for, like, why aren't Rezzers blowing factions that have worse upgrades just out of the water?
I mean, like you were saying, these, you know, these upgrades are generally, you know, as the name implies, an upgrade. So it's kind of buffing your baseline model. So as we were discussing with, like, Grave Spirit, it's a strong upgrade, but if you don't have underlying defenses, it's probably not going to take it at 2 points. So I think, you know, these upgrades are definitely very, very strong. But depending on the faction and the synergies you have with those upgrades with the existing models, I think plays a big factor. And, you know, I think base model power is always going to trump adding 2 points to kind of bring them up to the same or a slightly higher level. So I don't think upgrades will ever kind of be, like, I guess, the issue with balance. It's just going to kind of highlight differences in models between factions, or it might showcase, like, particularly problematic mechanics, like how you're saying, you know, intuition, being able to just kind of hand it off to anyone creates pretty large disparities.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. I mean, I tend to think that Rezzer's model roster is also very strong. My suspicion is that it has to do with costing, right? Just because the way Malifaux crews work, Rezzer crews are getting more from their upgrades than most other people. But you really can't afford to take that many upgrades, and every faction has at least some useful choices, to where, you know, I think the disparity of, you know, faction A's entire upgrade roster compared to faction B isn't, you know, you just can't reach far enough into that bench where it's gonna have the impact on the table that it seems to just when you know read and compare cards. You don't actually really play Rezzers very often.
No, I don't really play them at all. I Kidai for like 2 games and then just never went back to her.
When you are playing against them, which I mean you have done on occasion, do you find the impact of their upgrades to be, you know, noteworthy?
I would say, yeah. Grave Spirit's touch is just really annoying to fight into because it just gives so much tankiness on already tanky models. Intuition is noticeable, but it's like, I would say net less immediately noticeable, right? Because I don't know what cards they're drawing until after they've been flipped.
Uh-huh.
You know, there's some cases where your intuition is like, yep, that's the exact order I wanted them in.
Right.
So, and like, it doesn't feel as frustrating because it's like, you know, even without intuition, these things could succeed. So even though it's very powerful and it's creating more efficiency, I feel like it's a lot more like tangible when you're the person in control of it as opposed to the receiving end. Whereas like, yeah, Grey Spirit's touch is just visceral when it comes up.
Right. I mean, also, you know, maybe for you, because you do play a lot of Lynch, you know, intuition may not feel, I mean, I don't want to say that, you know, not special or whatever, but, you know, this is an effect that you often are already factoring into your play. So it maybe it just doesn't register as strongly when the opponent gets access to that information.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that. I also haven't really played much against Sheamus, where I feel like, you know, when it's the difference between 4 points of damage, it it's a lot worse.
I could see that. I mean, I think, yeah, if Weird designs a model and gives it a really strong effect on the expectation of, oh, well, it's kind of difficult to pull this off, and then it adds tools to make that easier, that is potentially a balance issue. Now, you know, Sheamus is a high impact master. I don't feel like, you know, there are people who have been saying, you know, Sheamus is a problem for the game, like pretty much from the start. But I do feel like although Sheamus is potentially a very strong NPE and definitely a game warping presence on the table, you know, I never hear, I shouldn't say never, but it's pretty rare for me to talk to someone who, you know, about Malifaux balance and to hear the first thing out of their mouth is nerf Sheamus, right? Mm-hmm. There are plenty of people who are on board with the idea of nerfing Sheamus, but he doesn't seem to be public enemy number one to me very often, which, I mean, I think is interesting. I wonder, you know, if his playstyle doesn't appeal to some people. I know because his background is pretty dark, there are people who just don't like to play him for lore reasons, or whatever. But yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting that, you know, Sheamus doesn't seem to like raise the same visceral complaints, even though I think his mechanics are the sort to where it can feel pretty miserable playing into him, and it's kind of like, why does this exist? Maybe it's just because, you know, yes, what Sheamus does is great, but there are also other Alpha Strike, or, you know, high damage potential, and just being a little bit better at that is annoying, but, you know, not the same as just totally shutting down someone's game, like Nexus used to, you know, like Damien used to, and, you know, so on and so forth.
I mean, I think it's the effect of just his playstyle. So if, like, Malifaux was, like, more impersonal and played, because, like, there's been, where I've read, you know, like, there's a lot of multiplayer games where they'll have this issue where you'll have, like, a character whose mechanics are, if you don't really understand them, like, for new players, it's extremely punishing. But once you get to, like, higher levels of play where people kind of understand the game mechanics, they become kind of balanced because you know how to compensate for this and you know how to deal with them. And I feel like Sheamus pretty cleanly fits into that. Like, when you're not aware of his mechanics, him just, like, popping up everywhere and just insta-killing your guys is, yeah, I can easily a horrible experience. And I feel like if that is, like, your intro to the game just feels dumb. It's like, right. Okay, so every turn I just lose a guy and I can barely kill your guys. But, you know, once you get a little more comfortable with playing objectives, you know, making sure you're not, like, exposing your guys to unnecessary risk or placing them in places where it's very easy for Sheamus to kind of just get, like, a double tap off on, like, fairly, I guess, weak models, or, you know, models that are prone to getting deleted off the board by Sheamus's gun, I think it gets easier to manage. And yeah, I feel like as a whole, like, even though Sheamus has, like, a ton of offensive ability in Keyword, he doesn't have a lot of other tools for dealing damage outside of himself.
Yeah, I would agree with that for sure. Which I think is kind of, you know, it's another thing that makes intuition, I mean, I don't want to say balanced, right? Because, you know, obviously intuition and the whisper is just kind of too good. But it's sort of like if one model can beat you in Malifaux, either that model is horribly broken or you have not played the game correctly, right? You know, Seamus is great, but he's got just his one turn, you know, his one activation every turn. And this is a game about scoring points, right? If you're in a GG where it's very heavily based on murder, I mean, okay, I can see the argument that, you know, Seamus is just way overpowered. But I suspect most of the time, it's not that Seamus is overpowered, it's that he's not fun to play against for many people, right? I mean, there is the kind of, if you don't know what's going on and he just whacks you aspect to it. But I, you know, there's also, I think, if you're playing against someone who is very strong with Seamus, then Seamus's presence on the board just feels very oppressive. And so that game experience maybe isn't as entertaining as something that, you know, a game that maybe you lost just as badly in terms of points, but you felt like you did more, or the, you know, the flow of the game was a bit more enjoyable. And I don't think intuition on its own, you know, I think that's more of a Seamus issue than an intuition issue. But I definitely think that, you know, intuition could be making that worse.
Yeah, yeah. I agree with all those points. I could definitely see that being an issue. Like, even if you know how to handle Seamus, it's just like he has his one thing, and the whole game is just whether or not you can control for that effectively.
Do you, I mean, this is, I guess, a bit of an aside from Reservoir Upgrade specifically, but in games, I mean, do you kind of favor high risk, high reward as a mechanic, or is that not something that you tend to be drawn towards?
I like when it's present in the game, and I feel like I'll always have like my period with the game where I lean into that really hard. And then after I've kind of gotten my fill of failure, I'll kind of like go back to the more stable crews.
Yeah, I want to be the kind of player who plays those effects. You know, it appeals to me on an emotional level. And I mean, as a non-Malifaux example, I've talked actually once before about how my brother and I, when we were little, we used to play this game called Star Control that had this dueling mode. And he played the Urquan Dreadnought, which was just this like massive thing with a million hit points and like a huge gun and the ability to launch these like little attack craft and stuff like that. And I played, I forget how to pronounce it because it was like some weird Iulio or whatever. But it was this little alien saucer craft that did piddly damage, but it was super fast and it had a teleport. So it would just, that was a special ability. It could just could constantly blink in and out into these random places. So it's a very, very, you know, like, it couldn't take hits. It wasn't, I wouldn't call it a glass cannon because it didn't do like a lot of damage or whatever. It's actually kind of difficult to explain that play style, but it was a high risk, low reward. You know, for some reason I'm drawn to play styles, or I'm drawn to crews or, you know, factions or whatever that present themselves as these kind of more mobile, more indirect, whereas my actual play style, it's more attritional, right? Like what I'm comfortable playing, it's more attritional, resilient. You know, I do tend to really value defenses, so I like things with resilience and so on and so forth. So it's difficult for me to reconcile those because I will often either play the maneuverable faction in just a, you know, really cowardly way, so I'm not getting that much from it, or, you know, I'll play them and then I won't do very well and I'll find it just very frustrating.
I also feel like when I start a new game, there's this period of like high ego where it's like, I'm going to play the most like high skill expression faction or character, whatever, in the game. and I'm going to prove that I'm really good at this game before I realize I'm pretty mediocre at most things, and that, you know, I'll float back down to the things that I can win while being more mediocre.
Right. I mean, I can see that, because I do think that oftentimes these mechanics present themselves as being just more interesting. Right? So it's kind of a natural draw into the game. You know, some people talk about Malifaux, the way they talk about it, you know, they kind of look down on brawling. You know, if that's how you're playing Malifaux, you know, you're playing an inferior brand of Malifaux. Whereas if you're doing this like misdirection, if you're scoring and you don't remove a single enemy model from the table, you somehow hit peak Malifaux or something. Which, I mean, from my tone, you can obviously tell I don't agree with. But I mean, I do think that just the models that tend to have those kinds of effects also, I think, tend to be a bit more interesting. Whereas, you know, you can kind of, I think, picture in your mind what the tanky fighty models of every game just kind of always look like, right? So,
sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there are definitely a lot of things that go into that. All right, so I think that's pretty much going to do it for us for Rezzer Upgrades, especially since for the last 10 minutes or so, we haven't been talking about Rezzer Upgrades. we know this is actually not the most popular topic for our listener base. Now, you know, we are a beginner pod, right? I mean, Colgan and I, we're mid-tier players. Our pod is meant for local players who are, you know, for the most part, less experienced than us. And especially when it comes to these upgrades, oftentimes it takes a little bit of time for our newer players to actually start integrating the upgrades into their crew hiring process. And so, you know, that and of course the desire to simply to finish out the series, which we began like 3 years ago or something at this point, is why we continue doing these upgrade episodes. Thanks, you know, if you are experienced and, you know, this is all old hat, we appreciate you listening. If you're new, we appreciate you listening. If we missed anything, feel free to let us know. If you have another use for any of these upgrades, hey, that, you know, that's great. If you think, in fact, Killer Instinct is the best of the Rezzer upgrades, make your case. We would love to hear it. We do this, you know, primarily to join the Malifaux community. And so we love hearing from everyone over, you know, pretty much any format that you want to reach out to us. We do read them. We don't always respond in a timely fashion, but we do read them and we do take them up. Recently, well, I should say recently, kind of a while ago now, but we got a request to do an Explorers Versatile episode that will be coming up at some point. So yeah, you know, if you send us an episode topic, you're very likely to hear it. And hopefully before too long. We also have PayPal, Patreon. Thank you very much to all of our backers, you know, past and present and future. We really appreciate that gesture of support. And you know, if you are not in a position to back, but you know, you still want to support us, like I said, listening, thank you very much. If you subscribe to our channel on Spotify or whatever, thank you. And if you reach out, that's also fantastic. And with that, I'll just say goodnight.
Night, everyone.